Today is Arbor Day. In Iowa, the emerald ash borer has a lot of people thinking about diversifying the trees in their landscape. Today, we'll talk about picking the right tree for your yard. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here. We'll get some tree planting advice and talk about the State Forest Nursery in Ames, which has sold over 150 million trees for conservation in Iowa. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here today, and he and Mark will answer your questions. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and it's also Arbor Day today. And what better way to celebrate than to have DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh here. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Are you planting trees today?
Actually, I will be in Cedar Rapids this afternoon helping with a tree planting up there, yes, for their Arbor Day celebration.
All right. And planting trees over the weekend, too?
I'll be doing two tree planting programs tomorrow morning talking about planting trees the right way.
All right. I imagine that Arbor Day and Arbor Day weekend are busy, busy times.
Well, and Earth Day was earlier in the week, so, you know, Arbor Day and Earth Day is every day.
All right. I want to talk about planting trees and picking trees to replace the ash trees that we are going to be losing over the next few years. But first, I want to talk about one of the places where a lot of people, particularly people with a significant amount of land, turn to get their trees, and that's the State Forest Nursery. Tell me a little bit about it. It was founded in the 1930s, right?
That's right. The Civilian Conservation Corps started it in the 1930s, and then it wasn't called the DNR at that time, but later the DNR took it over, and the Department of Natural Resources Forestry Bureau has been running it for years. It's in Ames, Iowa. There's probably about 98 to 100 acres. It's not all used for growing trees. There's a facility there for storing trees, for lifting trees, all those kind of things. We also have a very small growing unit down in southern Iowa, southeast Iowa, called the Montrose unit down in southeast Iowa. That's about 20 acres that has a little different soil that we can grow some of our pines and some of our other species. Our soil up in Ames is a little heavier, so it's a little challenging for some species, a little challenging for our equipment. But we grow anywhere from probably at any time there's 1 to 4 million seedlings in the ground up there, depending on what time of year it is.
And the goal is to grow native trees to Iowa?
Our goal is to grow native trees. Now with that, we do have a few conifers that are used for wildlife habitat, Christmas trees and stuff like that that are not native. We learned our lesson a number of years ago. We no longer grow species like autumn olive, honeysuckle, all those that are non-native, invasive. Conservation as a whole took a kind of a black eye, so we work really hard not to grow species that might become invasive.
Well, it's a learning curve.
Yes, but we do have a few non-native, common lilacs one that's used for field windbreaks and stuff like that still, and for cover. But in general, we target native species.
And who buys these trees?
Well, we have landowners all across Iowa that own, you know, maybe an acre up to a couple hundred acres that may just be planting a quarter acre, a half acre, or we might have tree plantings going in that are 40 acres, 50 acres, 60 acres. Now, that has shifted a little bit. A lot of our plantings are smaller than they used to be, but we may have tree plantings along our streams and creeks for riparian buffers. We don't encourage or we don't sell our trees for farmstead windbreaks and for ornamental purposes and stuff like that. But any type of conservation use, erosion control, Christmas tree production, wildlife habitat, whatever it may be, that's what those seedlings are sold for.
And since the 1930s, how many trees have been produced at the nursery?
The estimate that I've seen is around 150 million trees. Now, I'm sure not all of them are alive out there. As in any business, not all of them survive. We've had weather events throughout the years that may have had a big impact. And if those seedlings are not cared for, you know, we talk about caring for seed or trees in our yards and mulching and watering and stuff like that. It's a big issue with seedlings, too. You can't just go out in an old field, plant a couple hundred trees, stick them in the ground, green side up, hopefully, and then walk away and come back in 25 years and have a forest. There's a lot of work and effort that goes into it. And probably the biggest cause of loss, some people might say deer, but it actually isn't the biggest cause of loss of our seedlings. Probably the biggest cause is lack of maintenance and weed control. Once we plant those trees, we need to control the weeds either through using herbicides, mulching, light cultivation, whatever it is, for at least a good 3 years in a 2 to 4 foot wide band down the row of those trees or in 2 to 3 foot circles around those trees. That I've been doing this for 25 years and seen a lot of successful plantings, but I've seen unsuccessful plantings where they do weed control for a year, walk away, and think that it's going to do okay. So we can even get through these harsh years like 2012. Most of these conservation plantings, we don't water. So it's very key to, we're going to talk about right tree, right place and yards, but even for this, we look at the soils. We have district foresters across the state that work with these landowners. They look at what they're interested in as far as why they're planting them. But we really look at those soils and the site conditions and say, okay, these are the species that are going to do best. Because when we plant them or when they get planted, basically there's no extra water added. So just with weed control and other management techniques such as mowing the weeds and stuff like that, we can get on average in a good year, if we ever have a normal year again, we can get 85 to 90% plus survival. Wow. If we pick the right plants and take care of them. Even in 2012 and 05, a couple of drought years, I had plantings that they had 50% or more survival. They did have some losses, but with good weed control and stuff, they still had some survival. So with good management, you can have a good planting.
Well, let's move the conversation now into our yards and our smaller acreages. There are a lot of people with a lot of ash trees, and they're thinking about the future. And I know we've been talking now for a few years.
Forever and ever and ever and ever.
About diversifying. But when somebody has a whole row of ash trees, and that was a really common thing, to plant the same species in a row, they're beautiful trees. A lot of people have these rows that they're going to be able to enjoy for a couple more years.
Hopefully, or longer, or just longer, depending on how it spreads.
But they need to think about what to replace that with. And people like that kind of uniform look, but that's not what you're recommending.
No. It's really difficult to have that true uniform look and really have diversity. But, you know, I look at a lot of yards that have 4 or 5 different species strategically lined out, and you can still really do justice to your yard. And the fact is, if we have a line of the same species, if we lose or have a problem, you've lost everything. And so that is a challenge. What some communities have done in some states and others, in certain neighborhoods, they've actually planted the same tree maybe on one street, but the next street over, the next street over, they diversify. So they may lose a portion of a street or half a street to keep some uniformity. But that has always been a challenge with landscape architects and us trying to work together. How do you sometimes just maybe trying 3 species where you go every other one? Or I mean, there's other ways you can do it and still work some diversity but still maybe have some uniformity. But in a yard, if I was to plant 3 different trees in my yard, I would want to plant 3 different species. But 3 different species doesn't mean 3 different types of maple or 3 different types of oak. Or try to mix that up as much as possible, because again, we may have we keep talking about the emerald ash borer, but we have another pest called the Asian longhorn beetle, ALB, that loves maple. And so, you know, we've talked about a lot of our communities probably have 16 to 17% ash in our communities. Well, those same studies, we found there's 20 to 30% maple. So a lot of these communities, 50% of our trees are maple and ash. We're really, again, setting ourselves up for the Dutch elm disease, the emerald ash borer. So again, the more mixture we can, so if we plant a honey locust, some type of oak, and maybe still incorporate some maple as long as you mix it into the situation, that just because this pest is coming, we're not saying don't plant maple, but at the same time, you really need to think about mixing it up through that planting.
So when somebody decides to plant a tree or a few new trees, if you have a tree or a row of trees that you want to replace someday in the future, but you can't just plant new trees in the exact same place, how far away do you need to be thinking about?
Generally, if you have trees that you're thinking about replacing, if you can be somewhere between 30 and 40 feet away, that's ideal. If you can only be 25, hey, take what you can get. But you probably don't want to be any closer than that. And that can be the challenge for some people, because I've seen some people that have one tree in their yard. It's an ash tree. What do I do? And that can be a difficult answer. Sometimes you might just have to realize that either you decide to treat it to try to extend its life, or you keep it as long as you can, and then you just start over again. Sometimes it's you don't have a situation where you can put another. But if you are placing trees, you want to try to probably be at least 30 feet away from existing trees. And the same thing is if you're planning for shade for the house, you probably want to be 25, 30 feet away. You really need to think about the ultimate size of that tree. I don't know how many times I see spruce trees as a great foundation plant where people plant the spruce 5 feet on the corner of the house. And, well, when it's 5 foot tall, it looks awesome. But that tree wants to get 50 feet tall and have a 35-foot spread, and they call me when it's trying to get through the windows and say, can I just start whacking branches? Well, if we think about that that tree's going to expand, we can really eliminate a lot of those issues later on.
And if you have to have a tree removed and you have a large root system, can you get that trunk removed, get the stump removed, and plant something right where the other or you, very close to where the other tree was?
That is always a challenge, but there there is machinery out there that can actually remove a stump below ground and take a majority of that out. Most of the time we don't come in with a big crawler and dig out the root, but there are stump machines that can actually come in and clean that out. And if you can, you tend to want to try to move even a couple feet one direction or the other, but sometimes maybe you just don't have the option. So using a stumper to clean that out as much as possible and then go back into that area. And you might even wait a couple years, let that ground settle, and then come back and plant. But if you can move just a little bit away, that tends to help.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron will join us in a moment. And you can join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Also with us, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning. I think it's spring.
Yes. Yes, it is. We've had plenty of water this week, too.
Right.
So I've heard people complaining already, but
more's coming.
Yeah, I guess we've already forgotten the drought. We're ready to complain about water again. Hopefully we won't see flooding again this spring. If you would like to join our conversation with your questions about trees or about any of the plants in your garden or landscape, give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to go to Scott in Des Moines first. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I just want to mention about the ash trees. I heard on the news about this one that was destroyed.
The champion ash tree.
Yesterday, and we have a huge ash tree in our yard. We live in the west side of Des Moines. And we've gone to Waterbury meetings to talk to people about it and stuff. It's impossible for an ash tree to get through this period of the next 10 years or until I'm dead?
Well, anything is always possible. In most cases, if those trees are not protected somehow, as this pest comes through, most ash have been dying. So if nothing is done and those trees are just left, the chances of them living are not very good. With that said, in Michigan and other places, there are a few situations where they have what they call lingering trees, where there are some trees that seem to maybe have survived, so they're looking at potential tolerance or resistance in those trees. But that's a very small number. There are insecticidal treatments, and Iowa State has a very nice publication that lay those out, that people can look to use to try to minimize the potential impact of this insect. And in Michigan and Ohio and other states where this pest has gone through, there has been some success in protecting these trees. Now, again, these treatments are not 100%. They have other consequences, but if they're used properly, you can hopefully protect the environment. There are a number of chemicals that can actually be injected into the tree, which has a much lesser impact on the surroundings, and it goes specifically to that tree. So there are some options if a person wants to try to minimize the impact, but even with these insecticides, they only work when those trees are attacked. So as the insect, the larva, starts to feed on the tree, that actually will kill that insect. So trees will still be attacked, but you'd want to make sure that you have a tree that is healthy and is a good that insecticides are a good option for it. If it's a hazardous tree or if it's already unhealthy, it's probably not the best candidate for that treatment. But if it's a healthy tree that's vibrant and growing, that is one alternative.
All right. And Scott, were you also...
They sought it out to treat it, and then they discovered that it was actually destroyed by lightning or I don't know what.
Right. It was a very old tree. This was a champion black ash tree.
Up in Northeast Iowa.
Right. And it was in a remote location.
Here on my property is one of the few remaining large ash trees in this whole area. I have a bur oak that's 200 years old,
There are alternatives out there depending on what folks want. Every situation is going to be different.
It's like treating a human person like with cancer or something, right?
Well, it's basically this material. A lot of these materials are basically, again, they're not preventatives, but they're going to hopefully stop the specific attacks of these insects in those situations.
And as you mentioned, they could have consequences for the environment as well, and it's a long-term commitment.
Most of these treatments you either have to treat every year or every 2 years. But again, there are people out there that are having success. So again, it is an alternative, and in some communities, they're actually looking at it as a way to extend the life of these trees because all these trees have great benefits. And also, a lot of these communities that may have a couple hundred trees that eventually could die, it's going to be very difficult for them to pay or have the funding to remove them all at one time. So some of these different options are being considered to try to extend the life of these trees and maybe spread those costs out over time, too, and just extend the life of some of these trees.
All right, Scott, thank you so much for your call, and good luck to you. Ray is on the line now in Mason City. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Hi.
I got a question on daffodils.
Okay.
I bought a pot maybe 8-10 years ago, planted them. First year, I got 3 or 4, and then they kept spreading and growing. 4 years ago, three summers ago, I had 15 flowers. Next summer, I had 23.
Okay.
Last year, I had 3 or 4, and I figured it was maybe the bad winter. This year, I got 3.
Okay.
Do they have to be dug up and replanted like tulips?
Typically, no. What you might want to do, the main thing is let them die back on their own. Don't cut the foliage back before it's brown. Leave it till it's basically brown.
I wait till it gets on the ground and I just mow over it.
Right, because when the plant is blooming, that plant has used up all the stored food in the bulb, and so there's basically nothing left food-wise. After blooming, the foliage manufactures food and then stores that food in the bulb. And they have to store enough food in the bulb in order to bloom the next year. So if they don't store enough food, they just end up foliage. So the key there is let the foliage die back by itself. Make sure the plant gets at least 6 hours of direct sun. Now, what you can do is let them die back this spring. Then dig them up, separate them, and replant them. Okay? And make sure the site has a well-drained soil, plenty of sun, and over time, those bulbs should get stronger and should bloom again.
All right, Ray, thanks a lot for your call. Let's go now to Tom in Mason City. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I live along the Winnebago River northwest of Mason City, and it's very kind of a narrow band between a pond and the river, and it occasionally floods. But I had some elm down there, and they naturally die out, Dutch elm, and I use them for firewood. I leave some for the woodpeckers and everything, but there was quite a bit of them. And I figured if I got to replant, I'm going on and on. But I want to replant down there. I started looking at things. I thought I had good habitat, and I discovered that along with the dead elm, the majority was a lot of honeysuckle. And it was just kind of taking up everything. I mean, there is some songbirds nest there. I noticed the doves nest in it, and they do produce berry, but I want some more diversity. So I'm wondering what's best to plant there, because I got some bur oak. I really like oak. I got some of them ordered to plant, but I wonder what's best to put there, what's going to tolerate the occasional flooding, you know, and am I doing the right thing, taking out the honeysuckle in?
All right,
well,
Tom.
To answer your first question, Tom, yeah, you are doing the right thing. You're taking out that honeysuckle. The challenge with honeysuckle is it'll get 6 to 10 feet tall. It'll tend to shade everything out, and early on it will provide some protection and some cover, but later on, it basically shades everything out, and not very little can grow. And so it really kind of takes over, and then you don't get any native regeneration or any of those kind of things. So taking out that honeysuckle, the thing you got to remember is that if you have a lot of it, it takes a long time. So be patient and keep working at it. As far as what species to plant, I can list you off a whole bunch. But one thing I'd say right out of the beginning is I would probably go to iowadnr.gov and then go to environment and click on forestry and find out who your local district forester is in that area. Contact them, and actually we provide the service to come out and look at your situation, look at the soils, and give you recommendations. But bur oak is one option. Swamp oak is another. Things like silver maple, sycamore, river birch. And then as far as shrubs, you can look at some of silky dogwood, red osier dogwood. There's a multiple of species that may work, but I would probably work with, if it's a bigger area, even a couple acres, I'd probably work with the district forester and have them make some suggestions on specifics that help you meet your goals.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot for your call, and let's get to a few email questions here. This is from Becky. She says, I would like to do some lasagna gardening. What do you think about this technique? Any tips? I'd like to plant flowers and shrubs right away. Any ideas or opinions on how to make this work? And do you know what lasagna gardening is to start with, Richard?
Well, I've heard of the concept. I'm not real fond of it.
Okay.
When you plant a tree or a shrub, basically, I prefer to use the existing soil that you have, because they have a massive root system, and trying to amend the soil is very difficult to do. So if you have a very difficult site, then I would try to choose plants that can tolerate those conditions so they can adapt quite well. So,
all right. And lasagna gardening is one of these sort of a raised bed,
where you mix various things in there.
Okay. And you create what is hopefully a no-dig, no-till garden.
Right.
All right. Let's get to our next email here. This is from John in DeSoto. I have two ash trees in my front yard. In the event that I eventually lose these trees, what will I need to do to prepare for replanting? The layout of my yard doesn't readily allow much of a change in location for replacement trees.
Well, as we talked about earlier, he may have to come in with a stump remover, have a local person try to remove as much of that stump as deep as possible. And then if he can, even like I said, sometimes from the original stump, if you can even move 2 feet or 3 feet, depending on the size of the tree, you might be in an area where there was a root flare and there's not much root in those areas. It might make it a little easier to get those trees established.
Right, so but, even if you can move just a tiny bit, you're going to have better
but
success.
In some cases, you may not be. So if you can't come in with a stump remover and get it down below, you might even try to sever roots and try to pull as much of that root system out as possible and then refill and restart. The challenge from going right back in, and I actually looked at a site yesterday where someone had done that, a lot of times there's some root still left. And as it decomposes, things start to settle. And so sometimes you may plant over the top of that, but then you start to get that to settle, and then that tree may end up a little too deep. Mm-hmm. So if you can move, try to move a little bit, but if you can't, go as far as you can from it.
All right. Do what you can.
Yep.
All right. We are taking your questions about trees and plants this hour. It's Horticulture Day. With me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. There are a couple lines open for you right now at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Rose is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Charity.
Hi.
I brought in 3 or 4 of my hanging geranium plants this fall into my house,
mm-hmm.
and they've done very well.
Mm-hmm.
They look really nice. They've had lots of new leaves, and I was wondering before I put them back out in another week or so when it gets warmer if I ought to trim them back some.
What I'd probably do is bring them outside, maybe even this weekend, and put them
okay.
And initially put them in complete shade and out of the wind if you can. So they have a chance to kind of harden off or acclimate and leave them there unless the temperature is going to approach freezing at night. They can stay outside day and night. And maybe after, let's say, 4 or 5 days, then I would probably prune them back. And prune them back maybe by 1/3 or 1/2.
All right. And that's something you recommend, not necessarily the pruning, but acclimating any kind of hanging
right.
basket you might buy
right.
from a nursery, right?
Right. If you buy something from a greenhouse where it hasn't really been outside, the light intensity in the home, in the greenhouse, is not nearly as bright as it is outside. And so initially you want to put it in that shady location and kind of harden it off. Because if you don't, if you put it in full sun immediately, the high light intensity actually destroys some of the chlorophyll in the foliage. And it turns kind of a grayish color. And you can definitely tell it's been kind of burnt. So hardening it off actually is fairly easy and only takes a few days.
All right, Rose, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Alan in Cedar Falls. Hi, Alan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
And what's your question?
We planted a couple Bosnian pines at the tail end of last spring. And they endured the winter pretty well. But when the snow started melting, we noticed that about halfway down, all the foliage is rust color. And just curious if that's something that we should be concerned about.
Do you want me to grab that, Richard?
Well, we can both do it. this past winter has been very tough on some of the evergreens. And we're seeing this on some of the shrubs, things like yew, boxwood, the dwarf Alberta spruce.
White pine even a little bit.
White pine, where basically we had this long, difficult winter, and the sun and the wind kind of dried out the foliage. And so basically it kind of turned brown. It died, basically. As far as the extent of damage, right now it's really not known because obviously the needles have been destroyed, but the critical thing is, are the branches and the leaf buds still alive? If they're still alive, they'll break in a few weeks and produce new foliage, and so they may recover fully. But some of the evergreens I've seen, like some of the boxwoods and yews, I'm thinking some of the branches have also died. And so some portions may not survive. also with the dwarf Alberta spruce, they suffered quite a bit of damage too. So my suggestion is to wait a few more weeks, at least a month, to see what happens. And then at that point, you should know, have I lost that portion or is it still alive?
The other thing to look for, Alan, is a lot of this is showing up mostly on the west or southwest portion of the plants. If you're seeing it on the north or other portions, there could be other issues. But usually with diseases or insect problems, nothing like that's going to show up from anything over the winter. That would be stuff that would show up later in the year. So typically, if we're seeing things this time of year, we're often looking at environmental causes. But the majority of these that I'm seeing, it tends to really be on the south or southwest. And I actually have both of the two of the plants that Richard talked about. My yews are very brown on the south, and my Alberta are too. And actually, the Alberta did it a couple years ago. And so far, there's still some buds there. So again, if you wait, they'll look thin for a while because that brown will stay there. But like he said, if you wait, a lot of times, if it's not completely killed back, even on white pines, all their growth is on that tip. So if you can still see that the buds are intact, there is a chance.
All right, and we need to take a short break, and we'll talk a little bit about this, more about this when we get back, because a lot of people have questions about this. It is Horticulture Day today, also Arbor Day today. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here, along with ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran. We're answering your questions about the trees and plants in your life. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Now, just before the break, we were talking about all this brown we're seeing on a lot of different evergreen varieties, and we have about three email questions with the exact same question that we were just talking about. So I do want to ask one more thing before we move on from that, because a lot of people see all this brown on their trees or on their shrubs, and they want to cut it away.
Right, and I think it's premature to do that because, again, we're not sure the extent of the damage. If those branches are still alive, if the buds are still alive, they'll produce new growth. The brown needles will not green back up, but they'll fall off, so they'll recover fully. On the other hand, if the branches also have dried out and died, then certain portions may be totally dead. So I would definitely wait before making any decision or doing anything.
All right, so how long would you wait before you can tell that the branch is dead and you should cut it away?
I would say at least mid to late May.
All right.
Yeah, I would watch for new growth on other plants nearby, similar plants, and look for that, see when it comes. But as Richard said, it's so critical, and a lot of these, that new growth is at the tip. So if you cut off the brown, you're actually cutting off the potential new growth that may bring that plant back. So it is critical to wait.
All right. Here's a couple other quick email questions. What is the suitability of black tupelo, also called black gum, for planting in Iowa?
I would say in southern Iowa, that is a plant, and actually we have some tree distribution programs in other parts of the state, and that is one that we actually have started to incorporate a little bit, especially, I would say, in the southern part of the state. I'm up here in Iowa City, and I know we have one on the fairgrounds that does rather well, and it actually has a pretty vibrant reddish fall color. It's kind of unique. So I think it has some options. I would question much further north. Do you have any up there on campus?
We have some on campus.
And there are some at Ryman Gardens,
yes,
right?
Yes. And in the fall of the year, they are just gorgeous.
Just like any of these, I think we look at them as alternatives. And we're talking about a lot of different options out there. You just have to proceed with caution on a lot of these. And a lot of time you look for the right site. You look at what the characteristics of those trees are, what they really prefer, and then you try to make sure you match them up pretty exact to try to give them the best chance. But I think it has its options. Yeah.
All right. And this email question says that they have a southwest-facing front yard. Does the south side of the house, does that make it a little bit more...
It might make it a little more
accepting, challenging.
Yes. Yes. Okay. It might make it a little more challenging, but I still think it's... if it's something you want to try, it's
worth trying.
It's worth trying.
All right. And this is a tweet from Iowa Cyclist. I love bright yellow leaves in the fall. Any suggestions for a tree that would grow about 30 feet tall and in central eastern Iowa?
Well, I can think of a couple. What part of Iowa was that again?
Central Eastern.
Central Eastern. Okay. I wouldn't call it bright, but a couple that that have some yellow that may one is and it likes a nice east protected northeast is Redbud does have a yellow fall color. It's not vibrant, but it's not too bad. River birch is another one that has a yellow fall color, but that tree is going to be more in the probably 40 to 50 foot range. Can you think of any others, Richard?
Well, I was going to say redbud also,
yeah.
But possibly.
And of course, you have the added benefit of the purple in the spring.
Oh, absolutely.
But they're one that's very finicky as far as sight. They prefer kind of cool situations, maybe even a little shade or as an edge plant.
I was going to say another possibility would be common witch hazel. Now, that's kind of a large tree, a large shrub, small tree, but it can get to be like 20, 25 feet tall, and it does have a nice yellow fall color, especially where it gets a little bit more sun. And then it also has those very unusual flowers in October, November. So,
and there are, if one concern is Japanese beetle, but some of the little leaf lindens have a decent yellow fall color too. It doesn't last a long time, but there are a few selections out there if you look at some of the lists that tend to be a little more tolerant to Japanese beetle, so that may be one option too.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Kevin is on the line in Jessup. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a burn pit in my yard, and I burn leaves and dead branches and some scrap wood from my shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have a big pile of ash, and I'm wondering if I can use the ashes and spread them on my garden.
Well, the ashes really aren't of much value.
Okay.
So what you can do is spread the ash out over a large area like the lawn and dispose of it. But you're really not doing much good. You're simply getting rid of it.
Oh, okay. So there's not much value left in the ashes.
No, very few nutrients. It's mainly calcium carbonate, which is liming material. And you don't want to put on large quantities of that because it could raise the pH. But if you spread it out over a huge area, put it on small quantities, you get rid of it.
All right, great. Thank you.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot for your call. That answers a question I've been thinking about, too. Richard, thanks. David is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Can you give me any information about a Ficus carica Chicago hardy, a fig bush tree that supposedly can be grown in zone 5?
Yeah, supposedly.
Right.
If we have a winter like this again, then probably not.
Sure.
Yeah, we can. I would say it would be best to put it in a large container.
Okay.
Where you haul it inside in the fall, like in a garage, I think that'd be the best situation. Because outdoors, if we have another really difficult winter like this past winter, it may winter kill completely. So I would probably try it in a large container and then bring it inside in the fall. And a unheated garage probably would be sufficient where it's cold, but not as cold as outside.
Makes sense.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Ron in Center Point. Hi, Ron.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I have a section of arborvitae that's about 30 feet wide and about 400 feet long. And back in the drought a couple of years ago, I started losing a section of it about 60 feet by 30 feet. And I just tried mulching it, watering it more frequently, trying to keep those alive, but that they finally just died off. And so I've since removed those just this spring, which left me with a very large bed of leaves that I put there from maple trees and sticks and such. And I want to know about preparing the ground to reestablish some arborvitae back in there. And also in spots and along that 400-foot row where I've lost maybe one or two trees occasionally. And since the arborvitae needs full sun, what's your advice on getting this reestablished and filling it out?
Well, I think the one thing you need to think about is why we lost those. And as you mentioned, I think the drought had a big impact on it. And depending on what variety that you have, you may want to look at other alternatives as far as other varieties that may do a little better. Did you have the upright type narrow arborvitae,
yep.
Or do you know what variety you had?
I can't remember what exact type it was, but it was a cone shaped about 30 foot tall and about 15 feet in diameter.
Oh, 15 feet. Oh, so you had one of the, probably one of the Occidentalis. The as far as getting the site prepared is just controlling any weed competition in there, basically removing, in those cases, you may not have to remove the entire stump, depending on how big they were, but you may come in and try to remove the stump in some locations and basically just have an area where you know you can dig and fit it back in there. But you, the thing is, if we have another drought like this, I think there's a very good, depending on your site, you may actually look at the soil in those areas where you lost those trees and think about other alternatives. Some people don't like this plant, but I would think if it's a site that maybe is a little sandier, a little lighter, especially if you lost it in a continuous section, that tends to tell me that maybe that area might be a little lighter soil or there may be some more challenges there. So I would take a closer look at those soils, and by putting Arborvitae back there, you may lose them again in the same situation. I know people that pump the water and they still lost them. Some people don't like this tree, but I would think of a species, even Eastern Red Cedar. I know it's going to get a little bigger, and you're not going to have to plant as many, but if it's a lighter soil, that may be one species that would fit the need of that site and maybe help you through any of those bad conditions again.
Okay, and if it's a fairly loamy soil, what would your recommendation be?
If it's fairly loamy, you could look, maybe something, depending on how big you want it to be, I still would think of Eastern Red Cedar as a good alternative. If you want, do you want something that's going to stay in that 30-foot range or 40-foot range or?
Yeah, I really do. It makes a windbreak for the property.
What I would probably try to do is, you may actually want to contact me and send me some pictures. If you go to DNR.gov and then go to forestry and forestry assistance, you can find my contact information. May want to send me some pictures so we can try to identify what Arborvitae variety you have and then see if there's maybe some other varieties we can look at that may be more adaptable for you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, Ron, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Pat in Waterloo. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'm looking for some advice on what variety of crabapple tree to plant. We have one on our property currently that we love that was here when we moved, and it's got the nice red berries year-round. It's not that big and a nice round shape. Any advice for what that is or one that might be similar to it for us?
Well, there are many, many, many varieties or cultivars. The way that I would look at it, I would want something that is disease-resistant. By that I mean apple scab resistant, because I don't want to lose my foliage in midsummer. So my first criteria would be it must be disease resistant. Then I would find a variety with the right flower color. And we have whites and pinks and reddish purples. And so make sure it has the right color and also the right shape. We have those that are roundish. We have those that are more upright or columnar. So there are many, many varieties to choose from, but make sure it's disease resistant, it has the right color flower, and it has the right shape.
And, Pat, there's some great information from our own Dr. Jeff Files at Iowa State University, Mr. Crabapple, that he actually has a book on crabapples, and he has a number of lists that will tell you basically the size of those plants, their width, their height, what their fruit color might be, if the leaf is different, flower color. There's some really great information out there from Iowa State that'll help you make those decisions.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Pat. Next up, we have Budge on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Budge.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about bamboo. My wife has tried a couple of different times to grow bamboo inside and with the hopes of transplanting it outside. We have friends out in the Philadelphia area who have been very successful, and that climate's not that different from ours. But she's got a real green thumb, but it's really had a hard time getting them going inside. And just wanted to have any advice about that.
All right, so bamboo advice.
Right. Well, the climate in Philadelphia actually is quite a bit different than Iowa. It doesn't get nearly as cold there, so hardiness is a big issue. The Chicago Botanic Garden did a study recently or several years back where they looked at certain varieties or certain species of bamboo, and they did find that several were actually hardy in this area in the Midwest. So you may want to go to the Chicago Botanic Garden, to their website, and see if you can find that article. Now, one caution, bamboos typically spread, and sometimes very aggressively. And when they do, they can be very, very hard to contain. And so oftentimes people are concerned as far as how do I get rid of it or contain it. So just be aware that some of these bamboos are very aggressive, and they can become weed-like. So.
And Mark Vitosh is nodding vigorously.
I'm glad you said that, Richard. Thank you.
We have enough invasives to fight already, right, Mark? Okay, next up, Barb is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I've got a question about laying sod. I have an area in my yard that basically is bare from really heavy traffic, and I'm thinking I'm going to be better laying sod instead of trying to grow grass. Can you give me any recommendations?
Okay. Does the site receive full sun?
Yes. Okay. Not all day, but in the afternoon.
Okay. So at least 6 hours of direct sun.
Yes.
Okay. So that would be okay for sod because sod typically is Kentucky bluegrass, and Kentucky bluegrass requires full sun. So what I would do is I would go out there if there's been a lot of compaction, and I would work up the upper 3, 4, or 5 inches of soil, either by hand with a shovel or spade or a tiller. And then I would kind of rake it, and then I would get my sod and lay it down. You can put some fertilizer on first if you want. And I guess I would just use like a 10-10-10, about 1 pound per 100 square feet. Just kind of rake that in, firm up the soil, put down your sod, and then keep it moist. And so as far as watering, for the first week or so, you'll probably have to water at least once a day, sometimes twice a day on very hot, sunny, windy days. And then after about a week or so, then you should be able to water a little bit less often. So you might water every day for maybe 7 or 8 days, then skip a day, and then water, and then maybe skip 2 days, and then water. And gradually, within maybe a month, month and a half, once a week should be sufficient. And during this time, keep the grass mowed, and hopefully by early summer, you should have some nice sod.
All right, Barb, thanks a lot for your call. And the final question today from Dan. I have a cherry tree that I raised from a pit. I don't care about getting fruit, but I want to make sure it gets a good start when I remove it from its large pot and put it in the ground. When should I plant?
I would do it sometime in the next week or two. And make sure it's a well-drained soil because cherry trees do not like wet, poorly drained sites. Make sure it gets at least 6 hours of direct sun. And you might want to put some fencing around it so the rabbits don't get it. And hopefully it will grow.
And green side up.
Green side up, yes.
Always a good rule of thumb. All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Thank you.
DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Happy Arbor Day, Mark.
You too.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins, and with me in the studio right now is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River. Hi, News you. Buzz today.
Yes, Charity, lots of stories sprouting up on this Friday's News Buzz. We'll check in with Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell about the end of the session. Dean Borg about last night's GOP U.S. Republican Senate candidate debate. Amy Mayer on the evolution of the local food movement, all to come over the noon hour.
All right, today at noon on River to River. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.